Welcome to Academic Regalia, the podcast where I, Jacob Ward, regale you with the history of higher education. This episode of Academic Regalia is brought to you with generous support from Procrastination. Something, 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 Procrastination. We'll get around to writing the rest of this ad copy later. You're listening to part two of the first episode of Academic Regalia. This episode is about America's colonial colleges. In part one, I briefly described what constitutes a colonial college and discussed points from the history of the first four, namely Harvard, William & Mary, Yale, and Princeton. In part two, I will conclude this list. These colleges are Columbia University, the University of Pennsylvania, Brown University, Rutgers University, and Dartmouth College. Continuing with the chronological order of founding, I'll begin with Columbia. Founded as King's College in 1754 by royal charter of King George II of England, Columbia University is the oldest institution of higher learning in New York. King's College was founded as a school with Anglican affiliation, but its founders committed themselves to ideals of religious liberty when establishing the college's policies. Despite this commitment, there was still opposition to the college's Anglican orientation, which forced the Board of Governors to return public funds it had been given for the creation of the school. Some of this money was used by New York City to build a jail. Columbia's first class was held in a schoolhouse adjoining Trinity Church in Lower Manhattan. This class consisted of 8 students. As it grew, Columbia was established on a campus surrounded by a high fence with a porter at the gate, who kept track of those returning to the campus after curfew, and reported that list to the college's president weekly. This environment was modeled after Oxford, and included students walking around campus in their academic cap and gown. Part of this strict code can be attributed to the campus's proximity to the red light district, which may have been a distraction to the institution's pupils. In 1776, the American Revolution brought about a suspension of instruction at King's College lasting 8 years. During this time, several of the university's early alumni were very influential in the war and following it. Coming in a little earlier in this episode than the last, this brings us to this episode's Hamiltangent, as Alexander Hamilton was one of these influential alumni. Near the college's campus was a space known as the Common, in which the radical thinkers of the day were known to congregate. This place would serve as the place Hamilton would make his debut as a rabble-rousing orator. When listening to Farmer Refuted in Hamilton, I imagine it taking place in a space such as this. In 1784, the college reopened under its new name of Columbia College. In addition to its new name, the college also moved away from its cloistered environment to one where students might live at home or lodge elsewhere in the city. In 1857, Columbia moved approximately 4 miles up the island to 49th Street and Madison Avenue. Columbia's School of Law was founded the following year. Barnard College, one of the Seven Sisters, became affiliated with Columbia in 1889. In 1896, Columbia College became Columbia University. In 1897, the university moved once again, this time to Morningside Heights in Upper Manhattan, where Columbia had room to grow. In the 1960s, civil unrest surrounding the Vietnam War brought Columbia into the national spotlight when hundreds of students occupied campus buildings until the students were removed by police. These events led to the retirement of the university's president, cessation of certain research projects, and an overall downturn in finances and morale. These events also led to the formation of Columbia's University Senate, a 108-seat body which consists of university faculty, staff, students, and alumni, which govern the university alongside its 24-member Board of Trustees. As of mid-October 2017, Columbia University enrolls around 32,400 students, including nearly 8,900 undergraduates. The university is served by just over 4,100 faculty members. 90-ish miles away, and 1 year after the founding of Columbia, a collegiate charter was granted in 1755 to the College of Philadelphia, later to be named the University of Pennsylvania. UPenn's date of founding is somewhat disputed. On the university's website, they date their founding back to 1740 when a prominent evangelist named George Whitefield had the idea of building a school and house of worship in the city, but ran into budget constraints, which left the project unfinished for a decade. The building was purchased in 1751 by a group of 24 trustees led by founding father Benjamin Franklin, who, in 1749, had published an essay entitled Proposals Relating to the Education of Youth. Because of this essay and the subsequent founding of Penn's Anglican-dominated, yet officially non-sectarian Board of Trustees, 1749 was used as a founding date for UPenn for more than a century. However, in 1899, the Board of Trustees passed a resolution placing its founding in 1740, coincidentally, or not so coincidentally, making the University of Pennsylvania older than Princeton University, making Penn that much more prestigious in the eyes of the country's elite. Interestingly, were Princeton to make the same sort of tenuous argument, they may be able to place their founding back to 1726 at the founding of Log College, a Presbyterian school whose adherents were early supporters of Princeton's founding and who later became trustees of the institution. First occupying Whitefield's building at 4th and Arch, the school then moved into the unused presidential mansion 7 blocks away at 9th and Market, which it occupied until 1829, when the mansion was demolished and replaced by 2 new buildings at the same site, which served as Penn's campus until the school moved to its current home
in West Philadelphia
in 1872. The University of Pennsylvania has been affiliated with 35 Nobel laureates. The university is alma mater to more than 310,000 living alumni and is home to nearly 22,000 full-time students, split almost equally between undergraduate and graduate/professional students. Serving the campus are more than 4,600 faculty. Now we move back up the coast to the smallest state in the Union, Rhode Island, which is home to Brown University, initially named in its charter the College or University in the English Colony of Rhode Island and Providence Plantations. Brown's governing corporation consists of 2 distinct branches, the 42-member Board of Trustees and the 12-member Board of Fellows. At the time of Brown's founding, the Board of Trustees consisted of 36 members, of whom 22 were to be Baptists, 5 were to be Quakers, 4 to be Congregationalists, and 5 Episcopalians. Similarly, 3/4 of the Fellows, specifically including the President, were required to be Baptists. These religious requirements remained on the books until 1942. Despite the requirements of religious affiliation in Brown's governing body, the institution's charter specifically prohibits religious tests and provided that, quote, youth of all religious denominations shall and may be freely admitted to the equal advantages, emoluments, and honors of the college or university, end quote. It also required that instruction at the college not consist of, quote, sectarian differences of opinion, end quote. In September of 1769, the college graduated its first class, consisting of 7 students. 6 years later, in 1775, in response to the battles of Lexington and Concord, the graduating class elected to forego their public commencement ceremony. The following December, the college was closed when American troops were garrisoned at the college. It did not reopen until 1782. In 1804, after a donation from Nicholas Brown Jr. in the amount of $5,000, which would equate to approximately $100,000 today, the corporation voted to change the name of the college to Brown University. Brown's 4th president, Francis Wayland, was a driving force in the adoption of the principle of elective education. In 1850, he recommended that, quote, every student might study what he chose, all that he chose, and nothing but what he chose, end quote. He based this recommendation on his conclusion that, quote, we generally find that wherever a distinct love for any pursuit exists, it is accompanied by those mental endowments which ultimately lead to success. End quote. Since 1765, Brown University has grown from a student body of 1 to a body of nearly 10,000 students, more than 2/3 of which are undergraduates. The university is also home to 758 faculty members. Next, now to New Brunswick, New Jersey, we move on to Rutgers University. Rutgers was founded on November 10, 1766, under royal charter as Queen's College, named for Queen Charlotte of Mecklenburg, wife of King George III.
Awesome! Wow!
In 1771, it was decided by the trustees that the college would be located in New Brunswick. Although the college's founding was strongly influenced by the clergy of the Dutch Reformed Church, its charter gave the college a secular purpose of, quote, the education of youth in the learned languages and in the liberal and useful arts and sciences, end quote. Adding to the institution's secular bona fides, Unlike many other colleges, rather than in a church, Rutgers' first classes were held in a tavern. These first classes were taught by 18-year-old Frederick Frelinghuysen. In October 1774, the college held its first commencement with a graduating class of one. Joining the revolutionary efforts in 1776, John Taylor, the college's tutor, became a captain in the Revolutionary Army. A number of his students followed him into service. Due to the ongoing battles throughout New Jersey, classes were irregularly held in private homes. Following the British occupation of New Brunswick, the college was forced to relocate classes to North Branch, approximately 15 miles upriver. The college would return to New Brunswick in 1781. In 1793, due to financial difficulties, the college's Board of Trustees voted on a resolution to merge the school with Princeton. It failed by one vote. In 1795, still struggling financially and lacking faculty, the college decided to close. It did not reopen until 1808 after the trustees secured $12,000 in funding. The college closed once again 8 years later, this time due to economic depression caused by the War of 1812. Queen's College again reopened in 1825, renamed Rutgers College, in honor of Revolutionary War hero Colonel Henry Rutgers. While the trustees claimed they renamed the school because Rutgers, quote, epitomizes Christian values, end quote, it should also be pointed out that Colonel Rutgers was a wealthy philanthropist who would go on to make contributions to the college. In 1864, Rutgers became a land-grant institution under the Morrill Act of 1862, bringing the college into a relationship with the state of New Jersey for the first time. That same year, the Dutch Reformed Church severed its ties with Rutgers. In 1924, Rutgers College changed its name to Rutgers University. In 1945, it was designated the State University by the New Jersey Legislature. In 1956, the state of New Jersey formed a Board of Governors to manage the university, which at this point already oversaw several branch campuses, which were initially created as solely state institutions. The Board of Governors consists of 6 members appointed by the Governor of New Jersey and 5 members appointed by the Rutgers Board of Trustees. Because of Rutgers' unique history as a private institution that slowly came under state control, it still maintains some autonomy from the state. This semi-autonomy was affirmed when in 2012, Governor Chris Christie announced Rutgers Camden would be taken over by Rowan University, despite protestations from individuals affiliated with Rutgers Camden. However, because of Rutgers' unique situation, strong legal arguments were able to be made and the reorganization plan was scrapped. While Rutgers created the New Jersey College for Women in 1918, it did not begin admitting women to Rutgers College itself until 1972. It was the last non-military public college to do so. Rutgers enrolls more than 69,000 students, nearly 50,000 of whom are undergraduates. The university employs more than 8,000 faculty members. And now, for the last of the colonial colleges, we head north to Hanover, New Hampshire, and Dartmouth College. Dartmouth dates its founding to 1769 under royal charter. The charter created Dartmouth as a college, quote, for the education and instruction of youth of the Indian tribes of this land, and also of English youth and any others, end quote. Dartmouth is named for the second Earl of Dartmouth, a strong supporter of the school's founder, Congregationalist minister, the Reverend Eleazar Wheelock. The college granted its first degrees in 1771. Dartmouth College was party to a landmark case in U.S. constitutional and contract law in the 1819 case of Dartmouth College v. Woodward, which came about as a result of the ouster of Dartmouth's president by its Board of Trustees. In response, the state of New Hampshire attempted to force Dartmouth into becoming a public institution, altering its charter to reinstate the deposed president, enabling the governor to appoint trustees, placing other restrictions on the board, and seizing the college's corporate property. Argued by future senator and later Secretary of State Daniel Webster, an alumnus of Dartmouth, the case was heard by the Supreme Court under Chief Justice John Marshall, who wrote the majority opinion in favor of Dartmouth. The ruling resulted in the reversal of the state's actions and affirmed Dartmouth's ability to operate as a private corporation. The modern Board of Trustees of Dartmouth College consists of 26 members, including the President of the University and the Governor of New Hampshire, who serves in an ex officio capacity, a fact that I found interesting considering Dartmouth's history with the government of the state of New Hampshire. The other members of Dartmouth's Board of Trustees consist of 16 charter members appointed by the board itself and 8 alumni trustees nominated by the college's alumni. The college finally began admitting women in 1972. Around this same time, Dartmouth implemented the D Plan, a customizable year-round schedule in which students choose 5 quarters in which to attend classes, in addition to the 7 mandatory quarters of fall, winter, and spring of their freshman and senior years and their sophomore summer. Dartmouth is the smallest of the colonial colleges, enrolling only 6,500 students in total across its undergraduate and graduate programs. The university employs 602 tenured and tenure-track faculty, with 930 faculty members in total. Thank you for listening to part 2 of this episode on the colonial colleges. This storied set of 9 colleges and universities have had great influence on the course of American higher education. Thanks again to Procrastination for their support of this episode. Procrastination, we'll write this ad copy later. This has been Academic Regalia, a podcast about the history of higher education. Check out the podcast online at academicregalia.com for show notes and additional information. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at RegaliaPod, and you can follow me at Jacob C. Ward. Here's your Regalia fact of the show. Academic dress for doctoral graduates from Finnish universities consists of white tie, meaning a tailcoat, etc., accompanied by a fancy top hat and a sword. Thanks for listening!